This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Tempe. This week's challenge, make bacon.
Hey!
Hey. Merlin, you remember our mutual friend?
Yes.
Who owns the massage parlor?
Listen. A lot of women come in and they request the Texas Titty Twister.
Every time I go to a massage, I'm like, whoops.
Whoops.
Oops, oopsie.
Oh, well, bless me, my towel fell. Oh, is it moving? It's moving. Stand back. I don't know how big this thing gets. You know, that's a very old Bible joke.
Good morning, Merlin.
Good morning.
Adam,
Adam says to Eve, stand back. I don't know how big this thing gets.
What a good episode I just listened to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Neither do I. I'm just talking about my friend the masseuse, who I just drop a towel in front of.
I just made bacon, and I listened to an episode of a podcast, and it was very confusing.
Oh, was it? Did you like being in it? Did you enjoy being in it in a redacted form?
I like the part that I was in. Yeah, you know, I've decided. Are we just going to talk about this? I've decided I'm gonna message that reporter.
Oh God,
this reporter who I know a little bit, who writes for The Atlantic, sent me a message on Twitter. It's interesting because it's not. So they sent me the message and they said, "I'm writing a story about Inbox Zero. Could I get your comment on it?" And at the time I thought, in the back of my head, surely what happened was they knew that Merlin made Inbox Zero. They couldn't reach Merlin, and they knew I'm friends with Merlin, so they thought they'd get a comment from me. Does that make sense? Like I thought that was the process. Mm-hmm.
It makes sense in our circle.
Right.
But that's excluding the fact that this concept has taken on such a life of its own that people have no idea that I'm involved with it. I mean, except when they retroactively, I guess, decide to go do some research or read it.
Research in quotes.
This reporter contacted me and was like, can I do an interview? And I had a good reason why I couldn't do an interview. I think I was like, I don't have any time. Can I just like send you a statement on this? And the reporter was like, yeah, it's fine. And I wrote a whole thing about how the history of Inbox Zero and then Merlin started it and that
you summarized the concept very well. And I mean, I'm just going to give you your plaudits here. As I've said privately offline, I was very grateful that you took the time to write these, in my recollection, four long paragraphs that not only succinctly said what the thing was, but explained how it's kind of a shame that the actual thing is not what most people think it is. Mm-hmm. And isn't that kind of a bummer? Because you found it very useful. I was very touched. It was very affecting to me that you said that this had an influence on you that really helped you. That's why I did it. And so I want to stipulate, when you sent me that, I hadn't given it too much thought. I didn't read it immediately, but I went back and read the whole thing. And I thought it was really cool that you did that. And I really appreciated something that any normal person could read and say, let me set you straight on what this thing is that you don't understand.
I could tell from the pitch. So she had pitched me. She said, hi, I'm doing a story on the hellish quest for Inbox Zero. And I was wondering if you could comment briefly for it. And at the time, I thought it was a weird question because I thought she must be asking me because she knows I do this show with Merlin. And she couldn't get Merlin, so she's getting me. You know, she's onto the you know, it's like you've got...
You can't get Johnson, so you call Boswell. You can't get Socrates, so you call Plato.
Right, you've got your fourth choice Oscar host here, and I thought, that's weird. But I was like, yeah, I'll go into battle to defend the honor of Inbox Zero, and I wrote this whole thing, and I should have known from that the story she had already, prior to doing any research or contacting anyone, she had sort of already decided, you know, by describing it,
like every fucking journalist has the thing, and they'll just sit and wait until you say something that's close to what they want you to say.
Mm-hmm. Every sort of media training I've ever done is just don't talk to reporters. And I just try to do that.
Fake news. How did they know to be outside my house before I was indicted?
CNN got the heads up. Mueller called them on the red phone.
So anyway, I wrote this really, I thought a pretty nice thing about Inbox Zero. And I had I wrote four paragraphs and one sentence of it was, I said, you know, like, I don't understand how anyone could like live their life doing what the like most popularly understood answer idea of Inbox Zero, which is like answering every email. And then I spent this whole thing saying what Inbox Zero really was. And then she took that one sentence and put it in. And yep. It's just, it should have been so clear from reading it that from looking at what I sent, that wasn't the vibe of what I was trying to communicate.
It was, as I said on that episode, it was the single thing that you wrote, and it was the first thing you wrote, which was like, you're framing this as, I can't believe anybody would live their life in this crazy way. But it was the single sentence that could be taken, one could choose to take completely out of context, and it could be read as equivocal or very negative. It was the one thing that you said that if you didn't read the rest of it, could be, it's like when they do a movie review, right? And they do the elliptical quote that leaves out like, a stunning achievement in the history of shit films. Mm-hmm. And like they say, a stunning achievement. You know, it's like that kind of thing.
I'm writing her back right now.
No, don't do it. Don't, please don't. Oh, please don't.
I'm doing it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess in politics and stuff, please don't. In politics and stuff, like, don't you kind of have to talk to the reporter unless you're that car guy, the guy from Mueller's team? I mean,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you something else. Is, you know, you get this. I'm sure. Alex, I know, has been part of this on Cards Against Humanity stories that have been misreported. I mean, a classic one is that we really do something that's funny, and then people report on it like it's a hoax.
Oh mm-hmm. Yeah, the Super Bowl. Oh yeah, I was so mad about this.
Yeah, the Super Bowl ad. Like, we, like, actually bought a Super Bowl ad and did this dumb thing.
It had a potato, and my daughter still laughs about it.
But we actually did that, and then it got widely reported as, like, a hoax. Like, Cards Against Humanity, like, a hoax, you know, Super Bowl ad.
Oh, that you hadn't actually bought the ad?
Yeah. Like, okay. Widely reported that it was a hoax. And we don't do hoaxes. Like, we either do it or we don't. And mm-hmm. we don't... But anyway... If you guys ever get on a political campaign or have any engagement with a political campaign, ooh, the quality of reporting is very low, very, very low. And it does give you, it does make me, when I pick up the paper, even if it's, you know, a good paper like the Washington Post or something, like, there's just a good amount of that is just wrong, or the report, you know, like it's like you said, Merlin, it's someone who's sort of cherry picking, like they're waiting for someone to say something that sort of confirms their narrative.
Yes. And frequently that takes the shape of when I was more hungry for status and recognition, and I would take any request that came to me thinking it would be good. I would talk to anybody. I talk for hours. I talk and talk and talk and talk. And I honestly don't want to sound cynical, but the truth is they'll talk as long as you want to talk until they get the quote that they want. Now, this is a very foggy memory that I have mostly blocked out in my mind, but I'm going to share it. I think I've told this story on Back to Work, but one time circa mid-2000s when I had some notoriety in the world of Macs and productivity, Apple and productivity, but you know, it was mostly Macs then. I got contacted by this woman at one of those like Mac Gadget or Digital Addict or something like that. And she's like, I want to talk to you about about your work with Macs and productivity. And the interview went something like this. It was like, so Merlin, wouldn't you agree that you're probably one of the foremost thinkers on the topic of productivity as it relates to computers? And I said, you know, I really wouldn't at all. And if you were to quote something like that, that would be a gross mischaracterization of what I think and believe, so much so that it would be really frustrating to me. She said, okay, so would you say this is probably the most exciting time for Mac users in terms of proto? And it kept going like this and going and going and going. And of course, I'm fucking Holden Caulfield. And I'm like, no, you big phony. That's not right. Here, listen to my mouth words. My mouth words are better than yours. Use those. And it kept going on and on and on. And I started to get kind of frustrated. And she said, okay, well, I think I've got everything I need now. We need to book you for the photo shoot. And I
what?
Said, you need to shoot who in the what now? And she goes, I need to book you for the photo shoot. And I said, okay, tell me a little more about that. And she said, well, okay, so everybody who's being interviewed for this package is going to get a shot. You're going to come out and we have a photographer that's going to, you're going to dress like Steve Jobs. And everybody dresses like Steve Jobs. And you're going to have the turtleneck and the jeans. You know, and you sit on the floor, and then we photograph everybody like that for the package. And I said, well, I'll look forward to seeing that, but I don't think I'll have the lights breaking up. I don't think I'll have the availability for that photo shoot. Thank you for your time.
That's not even something I would masturbate to. That's insane. Max, do you have any breaking news for us this week? I feel like there's just...
Pew, pew, pew.
It's like back in the day where there's so much.
Cold is so fucking cold today.
Guys, it's so cold there.
So it is, let's see right now.
Alexa, what's the temperature in Chicago, Illinois? Oh, I turned it way down. I got a new thing. I got a remote for my Alexa and I turn it down now. Negative 17? What?
Oh, fake news, but hold on. Alexa, what does it feel like outside?
In Chicago, there's a wind chill warning in effect until Thursday, January 31st, 12 p.m. The current weather is minus 17 degrees Fahrenheit with partly sunny skies. Today's forecast has intermittent clouds with a high of minus 10 degrees and a low of minus 19 degrees.
Okay, so it's still not saying the wind chill, but still.
Yeah, so it's a wind chill. Wind chill as low as 45 to 55 below zero.
God.
Until 1 p.m. Thursday. Woo. Yeah, it's really, really cold. I haven't gone outside.
It feels like a day for biscuits and Netflix.
I was doing errands last night, and it was about, I don't know, what if my car said it was like 7 degrees out, and it was so fucking cold. It was freezing my nuts off outside. In terms of, you know, it's making me anxious because I can't help but think, every time I look out the window, I think, like, this is just the world, the broken world that we live in now. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that every... And then I also thought, well, should I move away from Chicago? Like, is this going to be how it is now that it's always, you know, negative a million degrees and it's, you know, it's like you're living in Antarctica and should I move? And then I was like, no, because everywhere else, there's Maryland where you live is going to burn down or there's going to be an earthquake and it's going to separate into the ocean.
Yes.
Like, it's all fucked. It's all fucked everywhere.
It's backwards day everywhere. And that's what's so frustrating about people failing to understand the relatively straightforward physics of climate change. Like there was, that's just going around on political Twitter yesterday after our president was saying, look, it's so cold outside. I guess whatever happened to global warming. And then I think it was a government, some kind of government bureau posted a childlike, like MS Paint style picture of a tea kettle over the Atlantic Ocean and saying, well, when it gets hot, that makes lots of steam and that steam goes over here and that makes it cold over there. It's like, this is how physics works, you dingus. It's like, I think it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, I have to be honest, it's been difficult for me to even think about. I've been worried about climate change for a very long time. Since I first heard about stop using hairspray, I've been really scared about mm-hmm. what we're doing to the planet, to the point where I have to be honest, I've kind of shut down thinking about it. But mm-hmm. but I guess the latest warnings are like, yeah, don't buy anything big in Miami right now. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to be fucked. You're going to be fucked so hard. Every Starbucks is going to have 2 feet of water in it.
You know about the president's hairspray.
Oh, is it Pantene? I feel like it got mentioned in an article. I love those. This is the best part of access journalism is when we get some brand names. We get to learn about not being able to use the light switches. Tell me about the president's hairspray.
This is from 2016 from factcheck.org, a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center. For at least 5 years, Donald Trump has been making false claims about hairspray and its impact on the ozone layer. Most recently, the likely Republican presidential nominee made comments at a rally in West Virginia. Trump said, hairspray is not like it used to be because chemicals in it that affect the ozone layer have been banned. Many countries began phasing out the ozone-depleting substances in hairspray in the 1980s, but these regulations wouldn't affect the quality of the hairspray. He also said using hairspray in his apartment, quote, which is sealed, would prevent any ozone-depleting substances from escaping into the environment. So basically, in 1987, the Montreal Protocol banned hairspray with CFCs in it, which is like an ozone-depleting, you know, yes. gas.
It makes holes.
And so in response, Trump stockpiled a lifetime supply of hairspray with CFCs, which he still uses.
Jesus, vintage hairspray.
Yeah.
He's like Elaine from Seinfeld saving the sponges. Good God.
Oh, yeah. I think this media presser is not hairspray worthy. My daughter in preschool had one of her closest friends, this little girl. What was her name? I think it was Naomi. And Naomi was so fucking colorful. You know how, I mean, I don't know how much exposure you have to little kids, but they come up with some banana stuff. Naomi could explain everything with total confidence. And Naomi would, to this day, my daughter still has Naomi quotes that are like, don't wear yellow when you're around mosquitoes because that attracts them. Or she points to a painting on the wall in a cafe and says, that's where my stuffed animal Jellycat was born. And she has everything that she says is provided with an utter certainty about causality in the world. And when the president talks like that, I'm reminded of Naomi because he sounds like he's explaining something with his big boy words. And he's like, the thing people don't understand about the so-called climate change, if you wear yellow, mosquitoes will be attracted and sting. Sad. It's like he just keeps doing it and he's still the president.
Oh, God. What was the article from Deadspin that the writer guy that you really
David
like?
Roth. David Roth.
Our big wet guy.
Our big wet president. Our big wet boy. I love David Roth.
It's just one of those things where he really toes the line between mockery and also not just being like, Cheeto, Cheeto, Drumpf, Drumpf, while actually making insights.
No.
I adore this guy now, despite not knowing his name.
I feel like Max is the one who turned us on to this fella, and I am so in the can for this guy. I love him. And the other day on Twitter, I said something, kind of a big statement. I said, I think this is true. He might be the writer the best writer working right now for me in terms of, like, I so look forward to a new post from him. And somebody responded and said, wow, thanks for telling me about this. This guy's really good. And I said something like, he in this time of like haze and numbness, he still finds a way to touch the original insanity.
Absolutely.
That we feel every day without, I mean, and of course he does have that Chapo style. Like, he does have a certain kind of style where he uses phrases like our big wet president, but he takes you out of this ongoing numbing moment of, oh, it's that again, you know, the horse is loose in a hospital. He takes you out of that moment to go like, this is really fucking insane. This guy's there's words we can't use anymore for what this guy is. He's goofy, and he somehow touches that feeling in me of the run up to November and all the way since, and going like, I honestly feel like I'm losing my mind every day. And I feel like he is the rare author that still has freshness to pointing out the utter madness of what we're living through.
The news media is, like, all throughout the campaign and still currently, you know, in the covering the president, the news media is so ill-equipped to report on Trump for what he is, because all they have are the tools and the language of covering the presidency, and Trump is not a normal president.
They're used to necktie coverage where there's actors that are party affiliated actors who have their reasons for what they do, and we may not agree, but I mean, he makes Dick Cheney look like a pretty sane guy. I mean, Dick Cheney had his fucking reasons for what he was doing, but with Trump, it's always Occam's razor. He's just really fucking stupid. He's really fucking stupid and self-involved and has zero interest in anything that is not a compliment to him right now. That's it. That's pretty much the whole story. He's incapable of seeing what any other adult would see in terms of the disparity between what's expected of him and what he's doing. He's incapable. Looks like nothing to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he can see it. This is very old, but I think it's just hard to have to live with that every day. And like, and then, so, but the funny part is then this is why I listen to Chapo. Is like, I don't agree with them. I mean, but I need someone to push this bruise so fucking hard that I remember there's a bruise there. And necktie Twitter does not do that for me. Well, Trump's considering this thing with pulling troops out of Syria. It's like, what?
The pageantry of the presidency and of American politics is all very purposefully and powerfully designed to, like, make it authoritative and make it normal and make it real and make it nostalgic and patriotic. You know what I mean? Like, all those, the songs and the Marine Corps marching band.
Yeah, it's all part of a long tradition of how other people took that office more seriously than anything they've ever done in their life.
Right.
I mean, it's just absurd the way we treat the presidency and people like me. The president was not designed for women or any marginalized folks, neither, and this is nothing new. But the fact that, like, marginalized folks on MSNBC, that even people like Rachel Maddow are considering this, like, the status quo is still mind-boggling to me. And it's, I don't know, in the past couple weeks, maybe it's the David Roth stuff, but it's like that fury is just building again.
Yeah, and it's like this ongoing state of, I can't believe I'm saying these words out loud. Given the state of anxiety in which I constantly live, there's this part of me that wonders if I have off-the-charts cortisol levels, that have led me to something approaching PTSD, where there are certain things in life that I'm very, very anxious about and it never goes away. And but you have coping mechanisms for that, right? You find a way to get through the day mostly despite this very heavy feeling about things that are out there. Like I said to Syracuse last night, like 9 days ago, I accidentally flushed half of a paper towel down the toilet at work. I instantly panicked and I haven't stopped thinking about it since. That's not normal. But I find a way to get through the day despite wondering if my landlord's going to take me to court, right? Like that's the kind of thing that goes through your mind. And with this, though, it's like you get a, even if you're like, God, an abused kid, you find a way to try and get through the day. Because if you ever directly address the thing that's made you how you are, it's just desperately painful. And people still, I mean, the most we get is a little bit of snark, but it's hard to really touch the madness because it is so incongruous. And all we want is for it to go away. And it's just a terrible way to live. At least we got bacon. Epic bacon!
Bacon week. Where was the Foxconn podcast episode? Was that on Reply All?
I know the one you mean with the talk with the mayor and the, all the yes. crookedness. Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, I feel like that was probably Reply All. That was a really chilling episode. That guy is a bad guy.
Yes. Foxconn in the Village?
Negative Mount Pleasant.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
A small town in Wisconsin becomes the site of a completely unprecedented experiment.
Oh, yeah.
Was that it?
That must be it. Yeah. Yeah, that must be it.
So basically, help me out here, but the thrust of that piece was that we all know about the president touting, doing his big announcement and touting the Foxconn was going to bring an unprecedented, like, mega factory, a complex of factories to Wisconsin. And that in return for these, I think, thousands, if not, like, tens of
but
thousands.
To build, like, the kind of screen that nobody wants anymore.
But, yes, but I mean, like, we got to go back to the original pitch. The original pitch was, this is going to be what they're doing in China, all those Chinamen making our phones. Not right. only are we going to start doing that in the good old US of A, but it's going to be your town is going to be a new, the beginning, there's a phrase the guy kept using that's escaping me now, but the mayor, was it? Or the city
mayor,
council
yeah.
guy?
Yeah.
And like, this is going to be like an unprecedented tech megaplex of actual hardcore hardware
the tech
construction.
Campus or whatever.
But it was going to be sprawling. It needed so much space because of all of the actual, and this is important because there's a reason it's done in China for lots of reasons, not least cost, but like, you know, that we're going to reshape, this is going to be the beginning of a whole new world for Wisconsin and arguably maybe America, is that these factories that used to go to the Chinamen, it's coming to America.
But the reporter who was following the story for Reply All, she started talking to sort of technology and manufacturing experts just in the episode. I mean, it seemed pretty cursory, right? She called a guy up who knew a lot about factories, and she was like, is this like a lasting thing? And he like looked at the plans, and he was like, well, they're making the kind of flat panel monitors that nobody wants anymore. I can't keep it straight, but they're making LCD and everyone wants OLED now or something along those lines. I might have gotten that wrong, but they want the old kind. They're making the old kind. And she was like, oh, well, if people decide they want the new kind, can they just switch over to that? And he just starts laughing.
Yeah, because the retooling that would be necessary for that would be like switching from Toyotas to toasters or something like that.
Yeah, you'd tear down the whole thing. You just have to rebuild the whole thing. But like...
But what happens? They got to get that land. They got to get that land.
Well, people should go. I don't want to spoil it. People should go listen to this episode because it's an amazing story of local politics. And
fair to say, it upended a community at a fundamental level.
Yes.
In order to get what they needed to build this factory of the future.
It's a slow moving horror story. This Reply All documentary about what's going on in this town. It was unbelievable. And it focuses on this woman who's sort of a nuisance or an activist in the town and. Her trying to just get this information out of the mayor and her like feud with the mayor.
The guy starts having like sock puppet accounts to go after her and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty wild. But anyway, it was always, I mean, that was the first time I really got all the details about this was hearing the story from Sruthi, and she called this one person it wasn't even like a, like an expose, right? She called someone. She was like, does this make any sense? And he was like, absolutely not. And so, of course, like now today in the news, it's like, yeah, it's like
Washington Post.
Yeah, they're Foxconn's like bailing on this factory and it's just going to be office space because no one wants these TVs. Like, it should have been obvious from the first thing that this was just sort of messaging. And it's also like Foxconn's doing the same thing Amazon does, where they shop around, they do comparison shopping to different municipalities to get tax breaks, and then they pocket the tax break and don't do the thing that they said they were going to do.
Let me read these paragraphs. So basically, this is Washington Post today. Foxconn's plans for a giant Wisconsin factory now looks uncertain. I'll jump down just a little bit here. The Taiwanese technology juggernaut initially pledged in 2017 to construct a $10 billion liquid crystal display panel plant and create up to 13,000 jobs in the state's northeast corner over the next 15 years. The positions would pay an average annual wage of $53,000. The firm said a solid salary for sure in the manufacturing realm. New paragraph. In exchange, Wisconsin agreed to give Foxconn at least $3 billion in state tax credits and breaks, according to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Now, my understanding is they still get those tax breaks, even though they're not going to make the hardware. Pretty good deal.
This feels like the – did you see the turns out story about Amazon Returns this week?
Oh, what? It gets resold? Tell me about that.
I felt like shit. I thought I was this great, great person for buying a bunch of shit on Amazon and then returning it thinking, oh, yeah, this is like resold. The idea being I'm going to try a lot of things and I rather have one thing that I like and obsess over rather than just switching out something every other month. But apparently most of the things you return to Amazon just sit in a warehouse until someone buys it at wholesale. But it ends up almost being like a what is it when you buy a storage space? Not hoarders. When people bid on
like preppers. Oh, like the storage wars.
Yeah, storage wars. Yeah.
Have you ever ordered something on Amazon and you get two of them?
Yeah, all the time. And then it's like,
what do you do?
Well, if it's something I don't want or need, like I return it, but it's put in this big box and the like wholesale hoarders just buy this big box and usually throw half of it out and resell the rest. It's like this giant, giant shit show and shows the machinery of like, yeah, nothing. There's no way you can be a good person and use Amazon, even though I use it every single day. It's really, really
I know, it's
great.
Killing me. It's killing me.
With the caveat that I order a lot of things on Amazon, I've probably 10 or 12 times I've ordered something on Amazon and gotten more than I ordered.
Really?
Yeah, like I get two of something.
I've started getting more of the – Gruber's talked about this a lot, and I used to roll my eyes. But I've started to get more of the stuff that I know – it was not – I try to avoid the Amazon Marketplace stuff because, you know, here's the thing. What it comes down to is, of course, I am a Prime customer. And, of course, I assume that anything on Prime mostly – you can hit that little dingus at the top and say, show me only Prime available things.
Oh, yeah.
And in my head, for no particular reason, I always assumed that meant that that was – not just fulfilled by Amazon, but was, you know, kind of by Amazon. You know what I mean? That basically it came from an Amazon facility. But increasingly stuff, what did I get? I've gotten more and more stuff lately that's like obviously before it was packed, it was like dented or shop worn or just generally fucked up. Like I ordered a book for my daughter recently that was just, it looked used. I've gotten more and more stuff like that lately on Prime deals. So, I mean, I maybe they've gotten to the point where they can do fulfillment on Marketplace stuff under their own aegis, and you never know the difference. I also had a record-breaking delivery, I think, setting aside the fact I do get paper towels from Amazon. I'll let you think about that for a minute. I needed a couple long boxes for my comics.
Think about a lot of stuff right now. Go on. Sorry for interrupting.
This is a good one. This is a pretty good one. So I get the buzz, and I go downstairs, and there is an probably large box, like a wow, really big box. It was like the kind of box that you would get, like, let's say, like a dehumidifier in. And I was like, oh, that's wild. I don't know if you guys know what a long box is, but it's like, you know, it's a big, long, white box for putting comics in. It's comic book sized, and it's, you know, probably like 4 feet long. And I thought, that's weird. They must have shipped me two assembled comics boxes. Nope. Opened it up. there was probably 60 feet of paper in there and two unfolded cardboard boxes in a cardboard box with like 60 feet of paper. I was like, oh my God, I just killed so many papers. Oh my God.
Those living beings we know as paper.
I'm history's greatest monster. Oh, is there a thing where you're a vegan except for paper? I have to stop.
I've definitely done that. If I've ordered, like the other day I ordered like one of those little birth control pill dispensers, but of sewing needles. Like what is that?
Yeah.
It's like a little.
No, where you turn the little dial.
And yeah. The needles come out. Yeah. I just needed
it's like a little bigger than a silver dollar.
No, it's big. It's like a I don't know what else to say. It's like it's like the size of like a softball.
Oh,
in diameter.
Are you like a pincushion?
No, but it holds the needle. It's like a clamshell and it has the needles are in it and you turn the thing.
Okay.
All
right. Sorry, it's not important to the story. Clamshell needle dispenser.
Needle dispenser.
Clamshell needle dispenser, one of my favorite Got It By Voices songs.
No, the needles come out. Two, three, four. I'm telling you, it exists. Anyway, it's very
dispenser.
But it came in a huge box, just filled with paper and packing peanuts, and it weighed nothing, and it's indestructible.
I heard a plunger that came in a 5-foot box. It was. I mean, I know why. I've read the articles. I know why they do this. Apparently, this turns down to like their fulfillment is so sophisticated that they know what size box will be next to other size boxes, so they know that in some cases. It makes it better for the larger shipping and packing pallet thing if this kind of box is on there rather than that size, right? So have you guys heard this? This is why they do this?
Yeah, because...
This is why. This is not a mistake. You you get an improbably large box because the robot knows that that's the size box that's going to be best. Softball. Wow, look at your needles.
You've never seen one of these things before?
It's not softball sized. What are you talking about? I got one of these. I got one of these from the Singer Corporation.
In diameter.
Do you know what size the packaging of birth control is?
Have you ever seen a softball? Was this written by a softball? Kill all the papers. Look at me. I'm Dick Cheney. I hate paper.
Follow-up. Mediaite. It's long been public knowledge that Mark Zuckerberg, the billionaire founder of Facebook, has hardcore New Year's resolutions. In 2009, he pledged to wear a tie to work every day.
That's hardcore.
In 2010, he pledged to learn Mandarin.
Rough.
In 2011, he pledged to only eat the flesh of animals he had slaughtered with his own hands.
Can you imagine him with those creepy eyes, what it looks like when he's slowly, ruefully destroying an animal with a laser?
He's not blinking, just unbroken eye contact with you while he does it. We now have a firsthand account of Zuckerberg's bloodthirsty resolution. In an interview with Rolling Stone, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey was asked about his most memorable encounter with the Facebook chief. Quote, "Well, there was a year when he was only eating what he was killing," Dorsey replied. "He made goat for me for dinner. He killed the goat. He kills it with a laser gun and then the knife," Dorsey continued. "Then they send it to the butcher."
He gets lasers we don't even have access to yet.
"A laser gun?" asked our befuddled Rolling Stone interviewer. Dorsey explained, "I don't know, a stun gun. They stun it, then he knifed it. Then they send it to a butcher." Evidently in Palo Alto, there's a rule or regulation that you can have 6 livestock on any lot of land. So he had 6 goats at the time. And I go, "We're eating the goat you killed?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Have you eaten goat before?" He's like, "Yeah, I love it." I'm like, "What else are we having?" "Salad." I said, "Where's the goat?" "It's in the oven." Then we wait about 30 minutes. He's like, "I think it's done now." We go into the diner.
Let's enjoy our normal human dinner. Do you enjoy normal human dinner? I like food. Let's eat chess pieces like normal people. Have you seen Lasertron 5000? Ha ha, yes, I fast 22 hours a day. Thank you for asking. Is this salad made of peas? Ha ha, that's funny humor joke.
Okay.
Enjoy human goat meal.
I go, Dorsey says, Where Dorsey's telling the story, he goes, "Where's the goat, Zuckerberg? It's in the oven." Then we wait for about 30 minutes. He's like, "I think it's done now." We go into the dining room. He puts the goat down. It was cold. That was memorable.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
Somebody reboot Zuckerberg.
I don't know if it went back in the oven. I just ate my salad.
Oh, oh shit. Did you see his fasting tweet?
No.
Jack?
Jack's or Zuckerberg's?
Well, Jack is into all of these like weird like Klingon pain rituals where he like goes and meditates in a cave and someone like waxes balls with a stick.
Because like here's the beauty part. Well, perhaps slightly like some other people I know. He says things that he thinks sound human in the interest of having a conversation.
Jack is he's always posting about like, remember he was like meditating in a cave and he's like, "I just let the mosquitoes bite me so I could like feel what it would be like."
And then he photographed it.
And then he photographed it and now he's like fasting and stuff. Do you think maybe he feels guilty about anything and that's why he needs to do all this self-flagellation and wear a hair shirt all the time? I don't know. Could be some psychology happening.
January 26th. Been playing with fasting for some time. I do a 22-hour fast daily, dinner only, and recently did a 3-day water fast. Biggest thing I noticed is how much time slows down. The day feels so much longer when not broken up by breakfast/lunch/dinner. Anyone else have this experience?
Yes, teenage girls who aren't billionaires and who are genuinely sad and sometimes harm themselves or have an eating disorder, except they're not billionaires.
I've begun a new practice of making small cuts in my thigh. I do them in parallel rows that I find very orderly. Anyone else have this experience?
I do read his tweets. He's such a teenage girl. Like, just like with his fucking quotes and like, as someone who's been a teenage girl, you do you, teenage girls. But
just setting up my MySpace. I want to put people in my circle. Anyone else have this experience? I'm told by my assistant that this is humorous.
Oh, God.
Holy shit. Whoa, to be a fly on the wall for that dinner. Oh, my God. Do they have drinks? Do they talk? Is there a TV on in the background? Are they just looking at each other with those dead doll eyes? Can you imagine the two of them sitting around like, "Oh, would you like to come over for a normal human meal tonight? Tonight is bad because I'm going to become a jet plane in a video game. All right, sounds good. Let's FaceTime for this." FaceTime.
Did you guys try out the FaceTime thing?
Oh, I tried it.
Yeah, immediately.
I had it done to me, but you did it yourself with Matchy, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was incredibly creepy. And then I did it with my parents just to see what would happen. And yep, got to...
You made a crime when you did that. Did you know that? You made a crime?
Oh, I did crime? Oh.
You did crime. Did you know that? That's a crime.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Is it really?
I read it on Necktie Twitter. Oh, yeah. If you knowingly... That's the Computer Interrelationship Act of 1992 or whatever. You did some kind of a crime, I think.
Hey, Merlin.
Yes?
Just think of any card in the deck.
Okay.
Don't say it into your microphone.
Think about it, but don't tell you.
Yeah, just think of any card in the deck. Okay? Yeah, don't tell me.
It's turned off. It's turned off.
It's turned off? Oh, okay.
I have it turned off.
I can't do this trick then.
Oh.
Mr. Police, I want to report an assault. do we know, so let's stipulate, if you're a dingus like me, and you have your services on, your Apple services, you know, you get stuff like your messages theoretically show up on all your devices. I have several iOS devices and they all had FaceTime on plus two computers. Do we know yet, like, which one is getting the audio, or is it all of them? Like, how does that work?
You
see my question though? Like, is my computer at work doing it? Is it only iOS?
I see. So here's my understanding, and I tested it a good amount. It affects all devices with FaceTime, including your computer. Mm. But
it's sending like six audio signals?
Oh,
like,
I
you know
see.
What I'm saying?
No, I understand what you're saying. That is a good question. Apple has some way.
Because how do it know?
Right. That's a good question. Apple has some way of determining which one to send the the notification to.
They've gotten a little better at that, where it doesn't ring on everything, right?
So I think they probably know if you're using your computer to put it on your computer screen, if you have that on. If you have your, if you don't, then do your phone. You know, I think that's how they do it. I'm guessing.
The only reason I ask is because I that had occurred to me. It would seem sensible to me that if I were using the iPhone when the call was made, it's sensible to me that that's what it would show up on. Having said that, the problem with the hack, or the bug rather, is that it's irrespective of whether you have accepted the call. So if you're not using any of your devices, it seems to still work, right? How does it pick which one?
I don't like that. Yeah. I thought it was only on iOS, but I guess I'm wrong, and now I'm turning everything.
But if you
off.
Were the kind of person that, for example, let's just say hypothetically, had an iPhone and two iPads, mm-hmm. and you weren't using any of them at the time, yeah, like that happens. But like, for the sake of argument, you were taking a shit and forgot your phone.
Yep.
Which one? You see my question. It's an interesting question to me.
No, I do, and I'm turning off. If I was the person that had two iPads literally like in arm's reach right now, I'm just turning off the iPads because I don't
know.
Good.
That's a good hypothetical idea.
Yep.
I mean, I tested this pretty extensively, and one thing I can tell you is like it does not work reliably. It's a bug, right? So it like kind of works sometimes. Sure. It kind of works others. I never got the video to work, even though purportedly there was some way that if you decline the call to get the video. I never was able to figure that out. So I think it's like a spotty sometimes thing. I think my guess is that having multiple devices probably further confuses it. But yeah, everyone should just have this off.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yet another reason Tim Cook is making us buy products so that we don't spy on each other.
Bad timing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bummer. It really is a bummer. And like, you just got to wonder, even in the, how long was it in the wild? Well, first of all, there's that story about the woman trying to report the bug to Apple and having a terrible time because they're like, go put it on radar, you dingus. And she couldn't get through to anybody. That was an interesting story and sad. But yeah, I mean, let's even say that it was out in the wild.
Did you see the tweet from the guy who was like, years ago, as an independent developer, I filed a bug on radar, and then I started working for Apple, and I got assigned the bug that I filed, and then I fixed the bug, and then I got a push notification to all of my devices that I still had my developer profile on, saying, can you verify this fix?
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah.
The call's coming from inside the radar.
Dig Doug, do we want to get into our challenge, or is there any more breaking news? Why did the Atlantic, was it the Atlantic, they put impeach on the cover? Is there some hubbub? Yeah, right? Or am I, I think I'm losing my mind.
Well, the case for the issue, there's been a lot of this. There's two books right now about the case for impeachment, and there's the Atlantic thing, and there's a lot of impeachment talk. But like, the issue is not that we don't have a reason to impeach the president. We had a reason to impeach him.
It would have happened already.
It's political interest and will.
We had as good or better reason to impeach Donald Trump almost from the first day he was in office than we did certainly Bill Clinton, but probably Nixon.
Right.
And now we 1,000,000% have him like stone cold, like way more than Nixon. But the question is not whether we got him. It's like, is there political will to do mm-hmm. anything about it? Like, he's guilty as shit. It's just we're not going to do anything about it until we win elections. And unfortunately, I don't think, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think right now the sort of issue of like all this Russia stuff and impeachment and all that, like I don't think we can win elections with that. I don't think the American people, like if you say to the American people, like what will get you out of bed to vote? And you're like, we're going to like impeach Trump and the Russians and fake news and all this, I think they're going to go back to sleep. Like, they just don't care. Like, the people want to vote for, like, their family and health care and things like that. Getting more money from their job and, all that good shit. That nobody really cares about this Russia stuff. So we get into this vicious cycle where we're like, but he should be impeached. But, you know, we can't do it until we have the political will. And we can't build the political will because people don't care about the issues we're talking about. Anyway, it's -50.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of fake news, every year this thing happens where it's like, oh man, polar vortex, thundersnow, and whether people get all, see how politically I was not problematic, not weathermen, whether people get really, really just all excited and hard about the weather that's going to happen in Chicago. And I'm like, yeah, it's not going to be that bad. It can't be that bad because it never is. This is the first time I have been like afraid of weather in Chicago. It's real bad.
There's ice on the inside of my double-paned windows.
Same.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
How's your cat?
Well, my house isn't cold.
Oh.
And your cat was cold and laying on a blanket,
mm-hmm,
Alex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's right next to me and behaving, so that's how you know it's cold. It's very strange.
Is your apartment cold?
Oh, yeah. It's not literally freezing, but it's enough that, you know, we're all in one room, except for now Matchy's on the couch with a space heater.
Hi, Matchy.
Hey,
Matchy. Hi, Matchy.
Wait a minute. What's the temperature? What's the inside temperature?
62.
Oh, my God. Really? Is the heat running?
Yeah.
That's so cold.
This is how...
That's pretty cold.
I mean, it's a...
Do you have a space heater?
Building. Yeah. We got space heaters. We got all the plastic on the windows. It's
kind of sexist. Kind of sexist to let your apartment get that cold.
I know.
Oh, that's a great point.
What about the Polish ladies?
Calling.
That's a great point, Merlin.
Thank you.
You know, just because Maddie wears a full wool suit around the house every day does not mean that he gets to set the thermostat to 62.
Listen, madman, dial it down. Some of us are freezing. I got a space heater under my space heater.
I think we're rocking our normal. I mean, we normally have our house at like 68 to 70, and I think we're right in the
zone.
Oh, you
monsters!
I bet your house is very well insulated, and like I bet you've got all your.
Well, it's a gut rehab. So we put all this, you know, space station material in the, you know, there's like science now.
But like your windows, like don't have a draft and stuff like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, it's new windows, and they
we basically live in a Gilligan's Island hut. It's like you can hear the whistling. It's wet on the inside of the windows. It's like if we lived anywhere else, this house would be unsustainable.
When they were working on the house, and I saw the quote for windows, they were like, I lost my fucking mind. Have we talked? You know, that was amazing. When we built the house, my whole perception of what's expensive and what's cheap to like put in a house completely flipped on its head. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. There's all these luxuries that I've always wanted. Like I've always wanted I always wanted a garbage disposal.
Like a heated bathroom floor, that kind of thing.
So I have a heated.
No, I was at Matt Fraction's house and he had a heated bathroom floor.
That.
I was like, fuck, I want this. This is so nice. It's not hot, but it's warm. It's so nice.
Yeah, so I have like this heated tile thing in my bathroom. I have a garbage disposal, and in my kitchen sink, I have an Insta-Hot. So it's like a little thing where you pull a lever and like boiling hot water comes out, and you can make like a cup of tea. Now, I've known that these things existed, and I had always assumed that like, and I've never had them in any apartment I've ever lived in, and I always assumed that like a garbage disposal was like a luxury for like a sultan. Like if I had to guess what that price tag was, I would have been like, that probably costs $30,000 to have a garbage disposal.
Oh, Mr. Temkin, if you have to ask, you cannot afford it.
So here's the thing.
That's the disposal dealer.
The heated tile in the bathroom was probably cost like $1,000. Like in the scale of building a house, like very, very low cost.
That's nothing. It cost me $200 anytime the plumber comes to the house. That's nothing.
The Insta-Hot cost like hundreds of dollars. The garbage disposal, I think it was like $90. Like these things cost nothing. But you know what cost a ton of fucking money is windows. Windows cost a fortune. They cost so
that
much money.
Makes so much
I couldn't
sense.
Believe it was tens of thousands of dollars of windows. I could not believe it. And I remember saying to the guys, I was like, do I need to buy this much window? Like, can't I get cheaper windows? And they were like, it's Chicago, get the nice windows. And like, damn, am I glad. Like I saw everyone post taping the plastic up on their windows. And on Twitter, and I was like, do I need to do that? And then someone was like, if you have like new windows, you probably don't. Like if you have good windows.
We used to do that in Ohio. In Ohio, we had plastic on our windows for like a third of the year. It really does make a difference. Yeah. Maybe not that much, but like, you know, on the big front window for sure, I mean, you could get it at like a hardware store. This is like window plastic. And you put this up and I think we taped it. Is that what you were doing, Alex? Were you taping up your windows in that photo?
Oh, yeah. The it's gorgeous, our windows.
Why'd you only do the one side?
Oh, that was the first half because I was at work. So that was just Matchy doing it. But we ordered, you know, like the supposedly good plastic that's like actual insulation a month ago from both Home Depot, and it was back ordered on Amazon and it just never got here. So it's like, well, let's go to Jewel, and it's working all right. Like, it's not like full-blown wind.
I noticed you use that blue tape that they use to tie up women when they're trafficked in Mexico.
No, it's oh no, that's painter's tape. Why did, oh no, no,
because they don't come in through the ports.
Oh, no.
They drive tanks over the wall.
No.
I think you might be an abductor.
Oh, no.
You're a trafficker.
Look at all my foil blankets. There's nothing going on here.
The challenge this
week. There's not really that much to say.
The challenge this week. I have some stuff to say. The challenge this week was mine, and it was a number of our friends, Dan Benjamin and Casey List, have various patented bacon methods.
Oh, fuck,
and I always
Casey
thought it would be
List.
Fun to try them all. And put them
by
in the
patented,
test.
We mean they read it somewhere and have a web page about it.
Well, there's a T-shirt too.
I had this idea that just came to me, and it's you cook food using the oven.
You know, you guys make fun, but I found vast differences between the different bacon recipes, and I have a few of my own to contribute.
Oh no, please go on. I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, you know, I want to hear this, and I would like to interrogate what it is that we reckon makes the various differences in what we come out with, whether that's temperature, cold oven, foil, no foil, rack, no rack. I'd be interested to hear like what you think makes a difference for the kind of bacon that you like. Again,
yes. Well, I had a couple of stipulations to put on this. The first the first thing is, I think people's taste in bacon varies really, really wildly. Like, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty as long as it's like cooked well, as long as whatever version of it is a good version of it, I like all kinds of bacon. I like a soft, you know, rendered bacon. I like a crisp bacon. I like a thick bacon. I like a real processed, you know, Oscar Mayer bacon. Like I can get down with any of it if it's a good version of what it is. But I also don't really have an aversion to like an oily bacon or anything like that. But I know some people feel really strongly. The other thing I want to say is like bacon is like any other protein. It benefits from having its temperature changed slowly. Protein does not like to have the temperature changed quickly. So it doesn't want to get hot quickly and it doesn't want to cool down quickly. And what happens is it seizes up and it gets tough and chewy.
That's why you put it in a cold oven, huh?
I think that's why Dan's recipe has you put it in a cold oven. But anything that's protein, including eggs, I think people should be thinking about how to change the temperature gradually rather than quickly. And you'll
yep. My go-to egg recipe, I think it's the New York Times recipe, is you poke holes. I actually have a bespoke thing from Amazon for poking a hole in an egg. Highly recommend it.
You have an egg poker?
And then I got an egg poker. But the two things that most people, I think, well, I don't want to sound condescending, but two things that help a lot are putting them in the pan before you turn it on. So this method is the big thing. Okay, so starting from cold with these eggs. Also putting in, I think it's a half a teaspoon.
Wait, I'm sorry. I truly don't understand this. Why are you poking holes in eggs?
Because for one, they're easier to peel. You can make them easier to peel.
You're yes. poking a hole in the egg and then and you're making a hard-boiled egg?
Yes,
or
a more or less
or whatever,
hard.
A boiled
yes,
egg?
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, but you poke the hole in, that lets the air get in and it cooks more thoroughly and doesn't stick to the sides. But the other thing
I have to say, I have never heard of that or tried that in my life. I'm very excited right now.
Do you use baking soda when you do the eggs?
What the fuck?
So what most people do is they boil a pot of water and drop in eggs for 15 minutes unpoked. That is a good recipe for a very unpleasant egg. You poke a hole in the fat end, the tiny pinhole basically at the end of the egg. You put them in cold water with, I think, don't do this without looking it up. I think it's half a teaspoon of baking soda per 3 cups of water, starting from zero. Then you start it cooking on high. When it gets to a boil, you let it boil for 1 minute. Then you cover it, take it off the heat, for 10 minutes, and then you instantly put them in ice water. And that's a good ass egg.
Oh. Huh.
And the baking soda and the whole make it a better egg. You don't get those green yolks.
What?
But anyway, I only mention that because, well, first of all, oh, by the way, this is my new, don't get this website. It's my website. It's called Egg Method.
Oh.
And you take an egg and you cook it. And I got shirts. And so I only mention that because that, to me, that supports what you said about being careful about what food, how food wants to be heated or cooled, right? Well, it's like Gordon Ramsay says, you don't make hot boiling spaghetti sauce and then put it directly into the fridge or it gets sour. Like there's things chemically or what, I don't know, physically that happen with food. And if you don't know the trick, like you make some ugly ass food.
Right. Well, I have long been a proponent of the Dan Benjamin bacon method.
Would you like to describe that?
Well, let me just go to baconmethod.com. Okay. So
that's a good URL. Good on him.
I like that there's a navigation bar on top with an option to donate.
Also, you can get some affiliate links to Pans. This is the ones he recommends.
So here's what I do. I follow this pretty much exactly. So I take up a metal baking sheet. I line it with tin foil. I take bacon. I do not worry about the bacon touching because it's all going to come apart. And I will just put all the bacon neatly lined in the pan. I'll try not to make it touch, but it doesn't matter that much if it does. Now
I use two pans, two baking sheets.
Now there's another piece of bacon philosophy from another podcast that I listen to. When you open up the package of bacon, make all the bacon.
But also when you take it, this is our life hacks episode. When you got a pack of bacon, everybody knows it can be hard to separate. Before you open it, basically fold it until it's like a half circle and kind of do this, and that'll loosen up the bacon a little bit.
It'll uncongeal it.
It'll decongeal the bacon.
Yeah.
And then make all the bacon. Oh, I'll save these three strips in case I want a treat later in the week. Fuck you. Make all the bacon.
No, you make the cooked bacon and put it in the fridge. It's good. It's a quick snack.
Now it's food.
Yeah. Make all the bacon. So you're gonna take your baking sheet, line it with tin foil. Put the bacon on the
aluminum foil.
Aluminum foil. Yeah. Put the bacon on the aluminum foil. Now you're going to put the thing in the oven. The oven is cold at this point, okay? Close the oven. Set the oven to bake at 400 degrees. Set the timer for 20 minutes.
400 or 450?
400 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hmm.
And then you're going to set the timer for 20 minutes and check on it. I sometimes will do check on it in about 15 minutes, but usually 20 minutes is a little light, and then I usually let it go for another five minutes.
Huh, okay.
Yep. And what's nice about that is the way that it comes up to temperature from 0 to 400 with the bacon in there, all the fat renders. It gets so soft. It gets so crisp. And bacon bacon really is better if it cooks in its own fat. Mm. All of these devices that strain the fat away are wrong. So once it comes out, you can dab the grease away like a fancy prince. Like, do you see these people who like they have like a paper towel and they blot the grease off of their pizza, individual slice of pizza?
Yeah,
just live your life, man.
I think it all comes back to how you like it. I like my bacon to be. I have a test, which is if I pick up this slice by one end and hold it straight up 90 degrees in the air. What happens to the piece? I think there are some people who like it to be floppy. There are some people who like it to be 100% rigid. I like it to be just short of totally rigid. I don't mind rigid. I kind of like semi-burned bacon. But that's usually my test is if it could stand up on its own.
When you're eating that and then you get to that little piece of the rendered fat and it's all soft, don't you get a little excited? Like that, ooh, no. Like this is a good bite. Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of angles to this. Now, some people say you should use a baking rack. Or a bake, is that what it's called? You get a sheet with the aluminum foil, and then you put, I think it's called a rack. You put it on there.
I've never tried this with a baking rack. I can't imagine it makes that much of a difference.
I think it would be, doesn't it get crispier cooking in the grease? Or am I getting that backwards?
It does. It gets crispier, but also more flavorful because the fat is where all the flavor is. You want it to cook in the, trust me, just trust me on this, everyone. Cook it in the fat. Just live your life.
Cook it in the fat. Just do it. Stop dabbing your pizza like a fancy duchess. Just eat it.
If you have some situation where you're really monitoring the oil droplets on the pizza or the bacon, just don't eat pizza or bacon, okay? Just have cauliflower.
Wow.
No, it's not like a health issue. I don't understand. It's okay. if you have you really want pizza and it just happens to be really poor quality pizza, and it will taste better if, you know, the grease isn't liquefied on the top for texture, and like you don't want it to like come in your mouth as you bite into it.
Oh, phrasing.
It's I meant it. It's gross. And I don't know. I'm a dabber.
There was a thing a few years ago where they introduced this new thing, which was like a fat substitute called Olestra. And
okay.
Do you remember Olestra?
Turns out.
Turns out. So here's the thing about Olestra, is it causes some unusual transit issues, at least it's something that in the business is called anal leakage. And so when you've enjoyed your Olestra chips with your cutting down on my fat because I'm healthy, you get something called anal leakage, which means without your butt meaning to or you meaning to, it produces a pizza grease-like excretion from your anus that you're not aware of or able to control.
What?
That's called anal leakage. Yeah. And now ever since somebody described that as being the consistency of pizza grease, I think about pizza differently.
Oh, okay. So okay.
It's called Olestra, Alex. You might want to look into it.
Merlin, so far you've ruined pizza and my window tape.
Well, you're a millennium. You're ruining everything.
Yeah, we are.
Golf clubs are dying because of millennials.
I remember when those Olestra chips came out, and it was just like, oh, man, these are so good. You can have as many as you want. You just sit there and have the whole bag of chips.
Sitting on a towel.
Yeah.
Just eat them on the can. Drip, drip, drip. Don't be a duchess. Eat your chips.
That's the circle of life.
You dumbass.
Okay, so I have more bacon. So I stand by. I personally endorse the Dan Benjamin bacon method available at baconmethod.com. I do think that's...
Oh, boy.
I think for most home cooks, that is probably the best way you can possibly
at least
make
pick
bacon.
Up a baking sheet. I do 450 for about half an hour, and it's usually pretty good. But it depends on your oven. I think my oven might be a little cooler than I think it is.
Like, well, you got to get a third-party oven thermometer.
I do, and then they get all black. They get all African-American, and I have to throw them out. They get all gunky. I hate that. I hate that. Huh. I hate what happens to them. It makes me sad.
Huh. That sounds not normal. That's not happened to our oven thermometer, but...
you think I got leakage in my oven?
You got a sick house. I don't know. Something's going on.
What? Just because the windows are wet on the inside? What makes you think that's unhealthy?
I think that's black mold. I think something's going on, Merlin.
We don't say black anymore.
Okay, so now here's the deal. So I also tried the Casey List bacon method, where you take a plate.
Casey
you
List.
Put two paper towels down on the plate. You put the raw bacon on the paper towels. You put two more paper towels on top. You microwave it for 2 minutes. You flip the whole thing upside down, the whole bacon.
You can also do this with paper plates on either side. It makes it easy to flip over.
Okay, there you go. You flip it, and then you do, I believe he says, 75 to 90 seconds. What happened to me was a wet mass of undercooked and yet burnt bacon that was stuck to the paper towel. I could see little, like, those candy dots from our Make Candy Great Again episode.
Oh, no.
The little paper stuck to the bacon. It was in... I tried a little corner of it, and it was hard, and it was tough, and it was inedible. And I gotta say, Casey, I don't even... Who needs bacon that much that you're like, I will eat that version of it? It's so bad, dude.
It varies. It depends on your microwave.
Don't do that.
Wow, hot takes from Max
it was
today.
So bad.
Hot takes cold weather.
Just,
wow.
Just don't have bacon. Just eat something else.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
If you're going to ruin it,
just don't have it. And I'll also say, like...
Are you banning them?
Casey, I'm banning you. Do not make bacon in this way.
No.
Do not make
you're
bacon in this
way. You're banned from enjoying bacon.
It would be better to have, like, literally nothing. Like, that is not, that, like, having no bacon is preferable to that microwave bacon.
Oh, my God.
It was so bad.
Oh, you're going to get letters?
And then, I do think if you know what you're doing, which most people don't, just pan frying bacon in a cast iron pan is probably the best method, and you can get it better than the bacon.
You can't make that much, though. I want bigger scale.
Well, that's why I see people crowd the pan. It's a whole disaster. People do not know what they're doing, so I think most people are better off sticking with Dan Benjamin's bacon method.
Or not eating bacon.
Finally, do check, if you're a bacon enthusiast, if you're an advanced bacon user, and you do know what you're doing, and you're intrigued by my words of wisdom, please go on to Serious Eats and look up sous vide bacon from my friend Kenji. sous vide bacon.
Your friend Kenji.
That is
all right.
That is the best.
Is there anybody you don't know?
Sous vide bacon.
Sous vide bacon. You've got to be kidding me.
It is. This
so
is
do you par cook it? You like par cook it and then finish it?
Yes. This is one of the best things I've ever had in my life.
Oh my God. I'm going to do this.
It's so good.
I sous vide so much. Probably half of the food I make involves sous vide in some way or another. I like his method for sausage. We have a thing. Well, I'm going to get to sausage night. It's not just the night on which the sausage is made. The dish is called sausage night. And I want to tell you about... I've been making it since I was a sophomore in college, and sausage night is very important.
I remember sausage night in my sophomore year.
Oh, dear. Under the Skirt, an exploration by Alex Cox. I made a presentation to my parents about why I should...
Merlin, here's the thing. You put the whole thing in the water. The whole thing in the original plastic packaging.
The whole what?
The whole bacon.
What fuck does that mean? Oscar Mayer package with the easy open corner?
You put the whole plastic package in the sous vide. It's in its, it's already in its.
Do you put it in the subsequent sucky bag?
No.
You put that doesn't make any sense. It would not tolerate 145 degrees for 8 to 48 hours.
It can and it does.
Dr. Don, 8 to 48. Dr. Don, please.
Please hit the red phone.
You place the bacon still in its original plastic packaging.
48 hours.
It's
you put it at 145 degrees for up to 48 hours.
Botulism boy. It's going to be a challenging breakfast in 2 days.
And here's the beauty of it. When it comes out, you barely cook it. It just gets kissed by the heat.
Let's reawaken the pathogens.
15 seconds.
Good morning, everybody. Who's ready to die? Daddy made bacon over the weekend.
Just 15 seconds aside.
You did what? Why don't you just cook it? I did cook it. I just didn't give it a kiss of finish.
You mock me, but wait till you try this.
Wear these black Nikes. Today we all go to the Comet from Daddy's Botulism Bacon.
Wait till you try it.
I love you. I love you. It's been in water for 2 days. You didn't even take it out of the package. It's a method. I have a shirt. Would anyone like to apologize to me before they die? I just want to go to church.
Did you guys make bacon or did you just have peanut butter for breakfast?
Oh, well.
So Alex had peanut butter. Merlin, what'd you do?
I made bacon.
Well, here's the thing. My family, there's a lot of pork happening in my family all the time. And
you have a whole barn
really
about
pork. I
want to
do the cock
pork. Don't you have
challenge.
A barn about pork?
I've never made bacon.
What?
I've never made bacon.
Oh, God, here we go.
The grease
this week, the role of Marco will be played by Alex. Bacon? Is that a food people eat?
No, I really like bacon, but my preference for bacon is... much like my preference for toast, very, very burnt, super, like, I want a perfectly parallel, like, I want all of it on the plate perfectly parallel, and it's, again, the grease.
No. Alex has never eaten bacon before.
I love bacon, well, okay.
How do you make bacon?
I mean, bacon's fucking epic, dude. I like it most of the ways. I've made it in the microwave that similar way many times. I used to do the pan. Now I do. I don't have a name for it, but because it's cooking food, it doesn't need a name. But basically, yeah, I do the cold oven thing. I do 450. I do it for about half an hour. It's not particularly interesting, but I do like the results. One problem is my kid's picky. She doesn't like the fatty part of the bacon. She's very repulsed by all fats. And so she like peels off the little bacon steak part, the little sliver of meat.
Oh, yeah.
And leaves the fatty pile. Yeah. But no, but I like it that way.
I make Maddie pull it off. It's it's slimy and it makes you very aware that you're eating an animal and I don't enjoy that.
You know what's funny is when I was a kid, I think I liked a phrase my mom uses in restaurants to this day still baffles people. One time somebody told her that she could order her breakfast to a certain level of doneness, and she continues to this day to say, I would like the scrambled eggs over medium, and I would like the bacon medium, please. Like, well, we got a pile of bacon. We made it six. That's what we're going to give you.
Wait, is that not a thing? I always say my eggs and bacon well done and toast crispy. Is that...
Well, I mean, like at our diner, there's a pile of bacon in a pan that they made earlier. And I imagine they could make it, they heat, you know, throw it on to heat it up, or they could, I guess, cook it more. I don't know. Mm. No, but I used to like it more on what I would call the medium side. If I did the Merlin 90 degree test, it would have flopped over, like not all the way, but it would have been pretty like wooga, 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 like the pencil trick. And now today, I do think I like, I mean, one thing about, we're talking about fucking bacon. I hate myself. But the one thing that's interesting about bacon is it has different aspects to its taste and mouthfeel that can be vastly different. Like a nearly burnt piece of bacon tastes very different from a lightly cooked piece of bacon. You know what I'm saying? Like it's almost a different food. You don't agree?
No, totally. Yeah. And there, when I said I love bacon, I'm going to redact that statement. I love my 90 degree bacon. It's perfect. I don't enjoy, I don't know. Like
you like it straight up like a 13-year-old boy's cock. You like it just go right up in the air.
Yeah. Damn it.
Eve, stand back. Can I borrow this catalog?
I have an actual question about like the process.
It's so cold where you are. It's so cold.
I'm loopy. Yeah, we didn't sleep like at all last night because of the draftiness. But like I've seen bacon like curl upon itself. What is happening there?
You sound like Tom Joad.
Bacon. Well, no, hold on. Isn't curly bacon?
I think that happens when you make it in a pan and you cook it too hot and it starts to seize up and it basically like the heat is so intense that it just starts warping.
Like
the proteins contract and then it gets rigid and it curls.
Huh. Is that what causes the little waves? Like a classic bacon, if you're going to draw a piece of bacon where it's got the little wibble, 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 like wavy pattern?
I don't know. I mean, who knows? I know if you do the bacon correct, like if you do it correctly and you change the temperature slowly and you let it get really nice and crisp, like the Dan Benjamin method, or you do it in a cast iron pan correctly, it should be pretty flat.
Okay. That mine's pretty flat. I got flat bacon.
It should be pretty flat.
You know another good trick, if you do the aluminum foil, is... I don't know if this is environmental, but when you, like, I don't have a disposal. You know, I'm not a fancy prince. But what I do is so I've turned off the oven, we're enjoying the bacon. I just let the pan sit with the aluminum foil in it for a little while. Like, do you put it in like a coffee can? Like, what do you do with bacon grease? My family used to save it. I don't know why. It might have been a religious thing.
You know, I was just looking at the Dan Benjamin bacon method, and he links to a device called... the RSVP Stoneware 6-Cup Grease Keeper Black. And it does support his important work at baconmethod.com if I buy it through his affiliate membership.
Please remember to like and subscribe.
What it is a little ceramic doohickey that holds your grease, and it has a strainer built right into it. And I actually would use that. I actually would use that.
You would use the bacon grease in further future cooking.
Oh, boy, you ever have some eggs cooked in the bacon grease?
Ew. Oh, yeah, I like that. Alex, you're such a gamer for this challenge. Thank you for even considering it and listening to us talk.
So did you cook any bacon in your house?
Oh, not even. I went and ordered well-done bacon, medium-done bacon, and softly cooked bacon from the breakfast place by our house where
You went to a breakfast place and said, can I get a softly cooked bacon?
Yes.
Make sure you kill it yourself with a laser gun.
Is it done yet? It's 30 minutes. Look at the hooves. Do you agree that they are unusual? Yes. They were not affected by the laser shooting or stun gun that I did for making food I eat. That reminds me, now I can't eat for 22 hours. Do you meditate? Ha ha ha. Yes. I use a VPN to meditate. Then I analyze the data. I came once.